It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. On Sunday, the U.S. Senate revealed the details of an immigration and national security package negotiated by a bipartisan group of senators. In addition to providing funding for Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan, the legislation would have made big changes to the asylum system, including allowing the president to shut down the border with Mexico and effectively pause asylum processing. Many Republicans in Congress turned against the bill. It failed in a vote in the Senate earlier today. But changes to the asylum system are still an open question. We're taking a look now at asylum law in the U.S., the proposed changes, and legal options for the White House when it comes to border security. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think we should make the asylum process more or less restrictive? What do you think of the Senate's immigration package? What questions do you have about it? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Rick Sue is a professor at the University of North Carolina School of Law, where he specializes in immigration, asylum, and refugee law. Rick, welcome back to Central Time.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be back.
A lot in this bill that now appears to be going nowhere, but it did a lot, it seems to me, when it came to asylum laws, or it tried to do it. As you looked at this proposed legislation, what struck you most about how it would impact the asylum process?
Yeah, this has probably been most restrictive asylum reform that has been proposed and certainly sort of exposed in this particular sense. So the biggest component is it just makes asylum harder to get. On the one hand, it raises the standard with regard to the initial screening of whether you even get into an asylum adjudication. It also makes the whole process faster, right? So you're doing it the first screening at 90 days, and then it's another 90 days. And I guess the plan there is to be able to make a determination within that first 180 days and up or down. And in this case, by raising the standard, it would also make it more likely that a person would be rejected or not in a good position to affirmatively prove their case.
Now, there are a lot of different phrases out there related to immigration, illegal and legal, refugee, asylum, work visas, things like that. Explain what asylum is in our immigration system and how big a role it plays.
Yeah, and that's a great question, because I think a lot of discussion right now is still talking about this as if we're still talking about the illegal immigration issues, let's say back in the 1980s or even the early 2000s. And that's not entirely the case, right? So it's not issues of individuals, let's say, sneaking into the border and just trying to meld and melt into the American society. Most of the issues that we're dealing with now is people coming and formally applying for asylum. So they're not legally admitted into the country in the sense that we have to determine whether they qualify for asylum, but they are in a legal process. And essentially what asylum is about is that we have an obligation under our law and international sort of agreements to not send people back to a situation in which they're at fear for their life. We call it a well-founded fear of persecution. And essentially, that's a determination that we're making, is whether or not we would have, in some sense, blood on our hands if we were responsible for sending them back to a dangerous situation.
The definition of that kind of persecution, though, Rick, seems like it varies depending on who you're talking to and maybe who's in the White House and who the Attorney General is. Religious persecution, okay, political persecution might apply, but people coming from high crime environments like Central America right now, that seems to be something we argue about, whether or not that makes someone eligible for asylum.
Yeah, and that really has sort of triggered two different components, right? So one is you have to put into a certain category, religion, political opinion, or as one of them is membership in a particular social group. And that's been opening up a lot of debate, whether if you're being targeted by, let's say, gang members because they feel that you're of a particular religion or you live in a particular community or something like that, does that fall into it? The other is that we're dealing with a lot of, let's say, situations in which the persecution isn't, let's say, government officials. It's, let's say, people that the government is unable to or unwilling to stop from persecuting you. That is actually within the law, but there are a lot of people that feel like that standard shouldn't be used. And if it isn't the government, if you're just fearing for the life from someone, even the government can't protect you from, like a warlord, or a gang-controlled territory or something like that, that's not something asylum should give you protection from.
A key part of the story, Rick, that is driving a lot of this political debate, a lot more people are seeking asylum in the last few years. The numbers, I think, are up and substantially up over previous years. Is that right?
That is correct.
What is driving that?
Yeah. So I guess there's the political story, and then there's probably, you know, looking behind that political story. So the political story is essentially this is, you know, Biden's immigration policies, and that's somehow driving. And to some extent, we have taken away, let's say, Title 42, right? That was the block on asylum that we had done before, but that was based on COVID. That's not actually part of the immigration code. So the idea was that we've made asylum easier to apply for. We are no longer expelling people for COVID restrictions, and that has made the numbers go up. But there's also something really interesting, which is it's not that just the numbers gone up, but the places where people are coming from have also changed. So I'd say about 5-10 years ago, we were mostly talking about Mexico and Central America, right? El Salvador, Nicaragua, Honduras. Now, actually, that population has gone down, and we're seeing flows much more from South America and also the Caribbean. So Haiti, Venezuela, other sort of situations, and maybe more South America as well, maybe starting to see a little Brazil, a little Argentina coming in. So that suggests that there's also push factors involved, which we don't focus on usually, but there's a lot of instability in a lot of countries right now, Venezuela being one of them and Colombia being another. So it seems like a lot of this is also driven by what's happening really in the Americas, which, interesting enough, besides the fact that they're in our backyard, is something that we don't pay attention to. But it does impact, essentially, immigration and asylum seeking quite substantially.
Talking to Rick Hsu from the School of Law at the University of North Carolina, looking at immigration and asylum laws in the U.S. We had this Senate deal reached by a couple of negotiators from different parties, and that deal rejected by the Senate as a whole. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Rick, one of the provisions in this legislation, again, not a passing, at least not yet, is that, okay, if we have a certain number of people apprehended at the border in a given day or on average over the course of the week, it gives the president the authority to shut down the border. What would that look like? What would shutting down the border in this circumstance mean?
That's probably one of the most substantial components of this bill. So one thing to know, if it's over 4,000 a day, averaged over 7 days, the president has the discretion to, quote unquote, shut down the border. But the bill also says if it's over 5,000 a day average, or if there's over 8,500 in any given day, the president doesn't even have discretion. Congress requires them to shut down the border. So it's important to note in this case, it's not just empowering Biden or the president in this particular case. It would force the president to do something, whether he wants to or not, with regard to the shutdown. The shutdown would then, once it triggers, be at least 90 days, 3 months shutdown, though no more than 270 days in the first year. Now, what do we mean by shutdown? I think a lot of people say the shutdown. We're not really shutting down the border. If you have a passport, you have a visa, all the processing is the same. Essentially, what we're shutting down is your ability to come to the country and say, you can't send me back because I'm seeking asylum. It's really just essentially an expulsion just for asylum proceedings. This is quite interesting because this provision is essentially what was part of the big debate during the Trump administration. Title 42, which we use COVID restrictions to shut down the border for asylum applications, the return to Mexico policy, you might have heard of that. That was also another process in which we essentially said we will not process certain asylum claims, stay in Mexico while that's going on. This really is very close, like a legal congressional authorization to do that. In fact, a mandate to do that. So the fact that this also got not a lot of support was sort of surprising in that sense, because in some ways this whole bill, usually we have an immigration compromise. This whole bill doesn't feel like that much of a compromise, except for the fact that it's compromised for, of course, Ukrainian and Israeli funding.
We saw kind of a turnabout from especially House Republican leadership on this. They were making the case a while back that we needed to change our laws, border security laws, and they wanted to attach that as a condition, as you mentioned, of Ukraine and other funding. Now we have this suggestion from the Senate. It's falling short, and House leadership, including Speaker Mike Johnson, said, you know what? We don't need a law. The president already has the authority to do border shutdowns. And some people have pointed toward the Trump policy targeting mostly Muslim nations. Ultimately, the U.S. Supreme Court backed him, I think, by a 5-4 vote in that circumstance. Does that give President Biden or a future president the authority to do these kind of asylum shutdowns under the law as it is.
Yeah. So let's not forget that even when presidents in the past, and not just Trump, even when Obama was doing it before, exercising executive power, all those were challenged by litigation. In fact, even when Biden was trying to unwind many things that Trump did, that was all challenged by litigation. And the foundation of those litigations is you do not have the power to do these things. Let's wait for Congress to say that you have the power to do these things. So I do think it's kind of interesting that, you know, we are in a position for Congress to, which we've been waiting for, to do something about and say what they want the immigration policy to be or what they want the president to do. And they back away from it and say that you already have the power to do so. We don't know we have the power to do so. We've been sort of on the margins, sort of stretching in different ways. It's also interesting that on a lot of other issues, right, both the courts, but also sort of in the political sphere have been challenging president's ability to do all sorts of things. Certainly the Supreme Court's pulling back on presidential power without explicit delegation. So again, this should be the gold standard of how we should do it. At the end of the day, immigration policy is congressional policy. The fact that Congress has not done anything in about, I don't know, a decade and a half, two decades, I don't think is an excuse for not doing something going forward.
Rick Sue is with us, professor of law at the University of North Carolina, talking about asylum law after the failure of a border security bill in the U.S. Senate earlier today. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Have you or someone you know immigrated to the U.S. in recent years? Have you or a family member applied for asylum at some point? What was that experience like? And looking at this immigration package, what, if anything, do you want to see Congress and or the president do when it comes to the U.S.-Mexico border? Join in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation with Rick Sue, professor of law at the University of North Carolina, looking at a bipartisan immigration package introduced in the U.S. Senate and how it would affect those seeking asylum in the U.S. The Senate, at least for now, has rejected that package. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. President Biden had supported the idea of passing this law. Here he is speaking last month at the First in the Nation dinner at Columbia, South Carolina.
But also give me, as president, the emergency authority to shut down the border until it could get back under control. If that bill were the law today, I'd shut down the border right now and fix it quickly. A bipartisan bill would be good for America and help fix our broken immigration system and allow speedy access for those who deserve to be here. And Congress needs to get it done.
Rick, we talked about the border shutdown, a part of that earlier. Also, the bill was aimed at speeding up, as the president mentioned there, speedy access for those who deserve to be here. I believe it included some efforts to increase staffing, to help process asylum claims, things like that. How important would that be?
Yeah, that's actually the most important component of it, not only for the quote-unquote individuals who may deserve asylum, but really, even among conservatives, that was seen as essentially the impetus for people who may not actually qualify for asylum to come seek for asylum. Right now, the asylum process is backlogged a year, 2 years, sometimes even more than that. So as a result, what ends up, the feeling is that a lot of people are coming here to apply for asylum, knowing that it would take at least that amount of time, let's say 2 years, for them to be in the United States before they'll even be heard on the initial sort of hearing. So I believe the sort of speeding it up on the one hand is, on the one hand, being able to reward asylum to those who really deserve it as quickly as possible. They can get their life settled and sort of move on, but also to make really quick determinations on those who would be rejected for asylum and hopefully incentivize people not to come for asylum if they don't have a legitimate claim. At the end of the day, asylum grants are about 10%. So I think the plan is to get the funding to speed up the process so we can essentially carve out the 10% quicker and be able to sort of deny the 90% and then remove them without that incentive to stay in the United States and come seek asylum.
Let's bring on a caller. John is with us in Eau Claire. John, hi.
Hello. I don't have a question. because I've been studying this issue for 40 years, but I do have an opinion. There is no reason for the Senate to throw Joe Biden a lifeline to save his failing candidacy for reelection. That's all this is about. You cannot trust Joe Biden and Mayorkas to implement whatever minor restrictions might be in this legislation. I would commend Senator Johnson. I assumed he opposes this. I would condemn Senator Baldwin, who I assume supports it. This country is going to hell. I work in a warehouse. Almost everybody I work with is living paycheck to paycheck. Their wages are being held down by an unending stream of immigrants willing to work for little in the way of wages, many of them in cash.
John, thanks for the call. Rick, a couple things there. First of all, a similar argument to an Obama-era effort to reform the immigration system. Republicans ultimately rejected it because they didn't trust Obama to implement it, they said at the time. John, making a similar argument here.
Yeah, I do think that this sort of trust of institutions, trust of different political parties, and certainly the political dynamic is playing a huge role with regard to how we see these things. I will say what's interesting about this bill is in all the other previous quote-unquote immigration compromises, you might say that there was a balance, right? So Democrats got something, right? Usually some sort of relaxation of some process, more legal immigration. And what they've been looking for in a lot of those bills for a long time is legalization for DACA members. What's interesting about this one is one might say in this case, there is no balance on the other side, right? Other than, I guess, the idea that it's a lifeline to Joe Biden, it's not clear that there's any balance, right? DACA's not on here. Dreamers, you know, the Dreamer situation's not on here. Legalization, amnesty, all those, right? Not on here. It's all essentially making it harder to grant asylum and everything in that process. But I do think the caller also mentioned something, and I think that's driving a lot of it. You know, it's interesting, right? Like I came to the United States in the 80s. I grew up during the 90s. It feels like every decade we have an immigration crisis. The border is never under control. The whole thing has been essentially a mess. And I feel like what's interesting in the last 20 years is it seems like the crisis is actually more advantageous than actually doing anything about it. That may be just the changing sense of politics, but I do think that is also, as the caller mentioned, the sign of sense that we just don't trust anyone, right, with regard to the implementation. The irony is Congress doesn't trust anyone. They don't have to grant discretion. Congress can just mandate specific actions. So it's not clear that we need to trust Biden to do anything if Congress is willing to act. It's just not clear if anyone's really actually engaged in thinking about what we want to do or what we should do, even if we want to achieve, I think in this case, what the caller was talking about, which was to limit immigration and maybe be concerned about American wages. That's also not part of the conversation right now either, I think, unfortunately.
John, thanks for the call. Rita is with us in Conover. Rita, hi.
Hi. Thank you very much.
Yeah, what did you want to bring up, Rita?
Well, I really have I feel like I don't know that much about immigration and asylum, but some people I've talked to think that the 5,000 limit a day would allow way too many people into the country. And I'm getting the understanding that even if people apply, you're saying only 10% apply. But so my question is, why is that number set at 5,000 and how is that reasonable? And kind of what is the difference between the Democrats' view of this and the Republicans as far as how many people should we be allowing into our country as a reasonable immigration number?
Rita, thanks for the call. Go ahead, Rick. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's perfect. And the one thing important about the 5,000 number, the 5,000 number isn't the people that we will allow in. It's the number in which once it triggers, we shut down the border completely. We have right now, there is no cap, right? It's unlimited in terms of people coming to apply for asylum. So if we're concerned about the 5,000 number being too much, it certainly is less than the uncapped number right now, right? Which even President Biden is realizing we don't have the funding or the resources to get to process essentially all these individuals. Even if we do allow, right? So it's not allowing 5,000. It's just once you go over 5,000, we just shut down the border. But even with regard to that number, you know, the question here is whether or not if we process these things faster with regard to asylum claims, that less people will come seek it. I do believe, a lot of the incentive was the fact that the process just takes so long. So maybe speeding that up will help. But really, to come to your question about how many people should we take, the thing is, we have that discussion with regard to lots of different grounds for immigration, family-based and employment. And historically, we haven't really had that conversation for asylum, because we imagine that asylum was special, right? It's humanitarian. It's not about, it's about individuals fleeing. It'd be weird to set a number. We forget the reason we're here was actually because of Nazi Germany, right? We rejected so many Jewish individuals, including a whole boatload in St. Louis when they came, because they didn't fit our numbers. So it's kind of weird to say that we set a number, at least on asylum, the original thinking, when in some ways you were supposed to get waves when there is a crisis. Whether there's a crisis or not, like the sort of height of the Holocaust, is another debate. But it's weird to be thinking about numbers in the past with regard to asylum, though clearly I think now that asylum is in the target, it is an area in which we are talking about numbers. And that's essentially, I guess, what we think about the whole process of humanitarian protection.
Rick, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you.
That's Rick Sue, professor of law at the University of North Carolina. He talked to us today about asylum laws and border security after a bipartisan plan failed in the U.S. Senate earlier today. Still up in the air whether Congress will tackle some kind of border security bill between now and, say, Election Day coming up later this year. Remember, you could follow these conversations all the time, anytime, online at WPR.org and share them with others if you think you heard something interesting that someone else would be interested in. Also follow reporting from the Wisconsin Public Radio News Department. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network.